Good evening. Coming back from a very, very successful trip to Europe and to Eretz Israel, to Israel. 2 to 3 lectures every day, Baruch Hashem, all over. And so many new people became Baalei Teshuva. I never imagined. I can't count how many. New Shomrei Shabbat. Between 1 and 2 months only, 3 Shabbat, 4 Shabbat, 6 Shabbatot. One after the other, 1, 2, 10, 20, 30, 50, I couldn't count. And this is with remote control, without even seeing the people ever before face to face. All through the media. Baruch Hashem, it's so successful there, Bliyai Nara, that we needed to buy 2 machines for production of CDs, and now we need a 3rd one, which works around the clock, 6 days a week. Yeah. Baruch Hashem. Back to reality here in America. And I realized something with the Baalei Teshuva. There's one major issue that I see everywhere I go. And even when I met with my cousin, the Talmid Chacham from Yerushalayim, he told me to bring it up in the lectures. He says that he also realized that many of the Baalei Teshuva, they actually act as their own rabbi. On the paper, they have a rabbi. They ask him, who is your rabbi? They give you a name. What's the connection between them and their rabbi? Not always there is a connection. Not always. Sometimes you ask the rabbi who these people are, he doesn't even know who they are. Because they may ask a question for him, not really asking. Many people don't ask because they're afraid to hear something they don't want to hear. So they rather act on their own. And of course, when a person acts on his own, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, always will find him reasons to act and to be correct. It's okay, this rabbi say on a lecture, this one say on a lecture, you know, and then a person is actually acting based on his own opinion. I give you a few examples. It's a very common problem today when finally people start to keep the laws of Nidah, family purity. We get a few good lectures about this issue, how important it is to keep the law of purity. One of the worst things in the Torah is to violate the rules of family purity, Nidah, when a woman is impure and her husband committing a sin with her, and one of the worst sins in the Torah. The worst the sin is, the worst the punishment is. And there's no bigger punishment than the punishment of someone who violates these rules. What is the punishment? Correct. 36 restrictions in the Torah are the worst. From 365 restrictions in the Torah, and 248 commandments of the Torah, positive mitzvot. There are 36 which are extremely severe, extremely. One of the 36 is the law of family purity, Taharat Mishpacha. When the Torah speaking about forbidden relationship, in Parashat Acharei Mot, this part we read in Yom Kippur, in the Mincha, the most important year, the most important hour of the year. Mincha of Erev Yom Kippurim. Couldn't be more important, just before Tfilat Ne'ilah. The reading of the Torah of Yom Kippur is all the forbidden laws and the forbidden relationship. One of the laws is Gilui Arayot. Person cannot be with his sister, cannot be with his mother, cannot be with his daughter. all this list. But when it comes to your own wife, or any other woman, but it comes even to his own wife, even to his own wife, that's what knew him. The stranger woman, you understand, but even to your own wife that she's permitted to you. When it comes to his own wife, the Torah says, it doesn't say it's forbidden relationship. It says don't even come near her, and it won't create any restriction or any sin. So over here the Torah gave an extra word. Anywhere else the Torah says, lo tegaler vata. Don't actually have an act with her. But over here it said, don't come near her. It may reflect as you're gonna commit a sin or something like that. So we see that the Torah was extra careful over here. And many people do not understand how severe those laws are. The Gemara says, one woman came to the yeshiva, to all the big chachamim, 2,000 years ago, not today. Today is needless to say. So 2,000 years ago, this woman came into the yeshiva, and she came to the rabbis, and she said, anyone here can explain to me why my husband passed away so early? He was righteous, he was Shomer Shabbos, he was learning Torah, he was such a great person. So after all the list that she gave about her husband, how great he was and how religious he was, they asked her, tell me, did your husband touch you in a time of Nida? She said, God forbid. Of course not. We keep the laws of Nida. So they said, did you stay in the same bed without relationship? You here and she is there. Did he stay with you in the same bed? She said, yes, same bed, but without making any sin. So they started to say to her, Ashrei ha-makom shelakach oto. That's the justice of Hashem. Today, if you say to someone, they'll stone you to death. You can't even say the word punishment today. Not allowed to talk. But back then, the rabbis had the courage. They told her in her face, you coming to complain why your husband went away so fast? The question is, how did he survive until now? And this is, the Gemara brings this story. What do you think the Gemara brings this story? To tell us about a widow who comes to complain about her husband? No, to teach the generation how important is the laws of Nida. Some things are fire. With fire, you don't play games. There are sins in life that when a person commits them, you know, it's easy to fix. You stop, you regret, you give a little tzedakah, you make confession, your kippur comes, it goes, it's over. But some of the sins are extremely severe. Even one drop of blood can create a new status of nida. Women don't check before they go to the mikveh, all the laws, and they have to check themselves. They are not sticking to the laws, and they're thinking, it's extra. That's what my cousin told me. He told me you should see what Hasid came to me, Baal Tshuva, long beards, long peot. And he said, tipa kechardal is mid rabbanan. It's rabbinical restriction. It's not directly from the Torah. This we can be mekel. I have news for you. The Ramban, one of the most important poskim, Kabbalists, commentators on the Torah, and a very, very holy man, the Ramban, almost 800 years ago. Migdolei HaRishonim, the Ramban. The Ramban said that every rabbinical restriction that you have in Judaism is actually a restriction from the Torah. There's no such thing, rabbinical restriction. Why? I'll give you an example of what he means. If Bill Gates is the owner of Microsoft. If he nominates me to be his representative, he comes in front of all of you, you the employees of Microsoft, and he says, ladies and gentlemen, this guy, I nominate him now to be in charge of his office. Everything you have a problem with, come to him. He is writing the checks, he raises salaries, he can fire, he can promote. He is me. There's no more Mr. Gates. Here, I am here today. You will see me for the first and last time. Now I put my books of law, the laws of Microsoft, in the hand of this gentleman. From now on, it's you and him. He is my hand. Next time when he signs a check, don't look at his hand. It's my hand. Next time when he throw you out of the office, don't look at him. It's me. Why? I nominated him. I gave him the power. This is what Hashem did in the Torah. In Parashat Shoftim, Hashem said, everything the Chachamim say to you, you must listen to them. Do not move left or right from any word that they tell you. Everyone who violates the rules of the Chachamim of his generation, not talking about the Chachamim in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. When the Torah was given, the chief rabbi was Moshe. And there were 70 elders, Chachamim otherwise, Aaron and all the others. But the Torah says, "Uvata el Kohen ve'el Dayan asher v'ircha." If you come in your days, in the future, to the Dayan. What Dayan means? A judge in a rabbinical court, a rabbi that knows Torah. Everything he will order you based on my Torah, not based on his college degree. Some rabbis, they also have other education. They're educated. It can be also a doctor, it can be an engineer, I don't know. There's things like this. You find sometimes rabbis that have secular educations as well. Physician, mathematician, doctor. You know, it's possible. You find. If he gives you instructions based on what he learned in Harvard Law School or in a medical school, we listen to him or not, it's no big deal. Why? It's not a divine law. It's laws that were made by people in the United States, in Israel, in Europe. It doesn't matter. It's people. But when he comes to you in the name of the Torah and he says to you, this is what the Torah says, this is what Shulchan Aruch says, this is what the Jewish Book of Law says, and he gives you psak halacha what to do, or when you come to Beit Din and you have a delegation, and he instructs you what to do based on the Torah, you go against his word, you actually go against me, Hashem says. So it's actually one and a half sins. Not that some people think, that's rabbinical. So it's really half as bad. It's not fully like the Torah. Oh, the Torah. I don't mess with Hashem, of course. But this is people, Rabbi. This is people. There's no such thing. The people do not sit and make up laws. People do not sit and one day they're in a bad mood, so they decide to make the Torah more strict. What do you think it is? That's everything that they ever wrote, and it became a psak halacha. This is how we are going to be judged one day when we leave this world. What do you think? You're going to be able to say to Hashem, well, Hashem, this one is from the rabbis. It's not from you. What do you think the answer would be? The answer would be, how do you even dare to open your mouth and speak against the rabbi when I wrote in the Torah that everything they will tell you based on my Torah, you must listen to them. Do not move left or right from any one of their instructions. So who directed you to act otherwise? Where did you get this nerve from? And this is what happened today to many of the Baalei Tshuva. They begin to say, okay, this one I keep, this one is not, this one yes, this one is not. And eventually they left with nothing. No holiness in the house, no nothing whatsoever. You have to know one thing. Many people now coming and complaining, and unfortunately there's so many tragedies, you have no idea what's going on out there. Not 1 hour without a tragedy. Not 1 hour without a tragedy. You can't even digest what's going on. You just heard about a horrible, horrible news. You don't even digest what just happened and another 1 or 2 hours following. You already forget about the first one because you have two more to cry about. And by the time you digest the second or the third, you already have five other ones. Emergency Tehillim for him, and emergency Tehillim from there. And the little girl was killed 18 months old in an accident, and her father is in a bad condition. One tragedy after the other. This is a generation that we live in. It's actually, it's like two sides to the coin. In one hand, Baruch Hashem, in the last 25 years, they said there are more than 1 million Baalei Tshuva. To define Baal Tshuva, it's a very hard mission. But let's make it easy. People who used to be violators of Shabbat, and now Baruch Hashem, they keep Shabbat. Maybe not fully, maybe they don't know the laws, but they accept it to keep Shabbat. They don't light the car, no fire, you know. So we have about a million, at least a million Baalei Tshuva in the world. It's a lot, a million people that used to be like Goyim, and now they became religious Jews, or even partially religious. It's a great progress. But on the other hand, the rest of the Jews, some of them have no idea what it is, nothing whatsoever, completely. And the intermarriage rates is increasing like crazy, increasing nonstop. When I started to give lectures 20 years ago, the intermarriage rate in the United States was 52%. Now it's more than 70% in 20 years. If I live to give 20 more years lectures, God forbid with the same ratio, what is it going to be 20 years from now? 95%, 90%? Eventually all Jews will marry Goyim, and that's the end of us. If it's continued to go the way it is. It's terrible. I said in one of my lectures, people always jump with their feelings. They're not trying to understand what the speaker is saying. Instead of jumping, focus on the facts. I say, in the time of the Holocaust, the situations were very similar before the Holocaust started. 80% of the Jews in Germany married non-Jews, which means in many of their families, the kids were not Jewish. Also in Hungary, also in Czechoslovakia, even in Poland. I say even in Poland, because in Poland there are many Hasidim not running to marry Goyim. Very rare by them. But in Poland, not everyone was Hasidish. There were other people also. So the intermarriage rate in some countries were 80% or 70% or 60%. Horrible rates. That makes many of the people who consider to be Jewish, not Jewish. Let me explain what I mean. If you look at the phone book right now in the United States, any Jewish name you can think of, you will find in a phone book. Levi, Kohen, Rosenberg, Mizrahi, Rosenzweig, hundreds of names. Automatically, you think, oh, Jew, non-Jew, Smith, actually there's a lot of Jews named Smith. I met rabbis there named Smith. Many of the names of the Goyim, you know, this is a non-Jewish name. But you'd be very surprised, very, very surprised. Sometimes you can get a name, Mahmoud, last name, or Abdallah, or Christopherson, or all kinds of names that you know this is not Jewish name, and the person is Jewish. And sometimes you see names like Levi, Cohen, etc., and the people are non-Jewish. You know? Do you know how many names are pure Jewish names and the people are completely non-Jews? Let me give you an example. Mr. Stern, Mary Christine. He has four kids with him. He even called him Jewish name. Avi, Isaac, Jacob. What can be more Jewish than Jacob Stern? But in heaven, in the eyes of Hashem, Jacob Stern is a goy. He's not a Jew. His mother wasn't Jewish. Now, when Hitler came in Yimach Shimo to kill this family, Mr. Stern and his four children and his wife, do you think he cared that according to the Jewish law, those kids were not Jewish? Do you think he cared? For him, they are Jews. Their last name is Stern. So he killed all six. How many from the six were Jewish? Only one, the father. The other five were not Jewish. So he killed many of the 6 million who were not Jewish. We don't know, we will never know the numbers. Only Hashem knows the numbers. There's no way to know. We have rough statistic, roughly, we don't know. It could be at the same time that the other 50 million goyim that Hitler killed, many of them were Jewish. I also don't know. It could be maybe one side balanced the other. I'm not coming to challenge any statistic. I'm just telling you this is the way the world became. When you mix with other nations according to the laws of God, your children, according to the Torah, are not Jewish. It doesn't matter that they look Jews or they love Judaism and they kiss the mezuzah and you made them bar mitzvah in a shul. You can lie to yourself, you can live in a dream as much as you want. But these kids are not Jewish. There's a law, there's a divine law. I didn't write the divine law. If it was up to me, maybe it would be a different law. But the creator of the world, when he gave his law, what did he say? Aba mina goya karui na. Someone that has children from a non-Jewish woman, his children belongs to her, not to him. They have nothing to do with the father. One day the father dies and he goes to one place and the kids go with the mother to a different world. There's no connection between them. Even if he paid $10 million to raise them, even if he paid for their colleges, for their medical school, for their homes, he bought them businesses, whatever he has done for them, physically he is the biological father. But spiritually, there's no connection between him and them whatsoever. Even if this guy, his name is Avraham Cohen, not only is not a Cohen, he's not even a Jew. It's about time that the Jews will start to wake up and realize that it doesn't go by the last name. It goes by if the mother was Jewish at the time of the birth or not. She can be a convert, kosher convert. The kids are Jewish. If she's a Reform convert or a conservative convert, or even some of the Orthodox questionable conversions that also she never accepted the laws when she converted. Happens all the time. I was now in Europe. One kid comes to me, as the conversation, he said to me, my mother is a convert. I asked him, when your mother converted, did she accept it to keep Shabbat, modesty, kosher, all the laws? He said, I don't think so. He said, my father also is a convert, but for sure my father kept everything. I said, it doesn't go by the father, it goes by the mother. The mother didn't keep. She didn't keep all the laws in the time of the conversion. She did not accept to keep all the laws. The conversion was a waste of time. Who are you fooling? You're going to force Hashem to give you a new status in your ID? Based on what you want? Based on what your spouse wants? Based on what the local representative wants? Who cares what you want? It's only one truth. This is the law. You want to be Jewish, you must accept all the laws. Even Jews from birth that were born to a Jewish mother and they don't keep Shabbat, they are excluded from Judaism until they do tshuva. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Mechalel Shabbat areu kegoy lechol davar." Someone who violates Shabbat is counted 100% like a goy. It's no joke. 7 different chapters in Shulchan Aruch it's written. Not once, not twice, not 3 times. 7 times. Somebody wrote to me an email. He said, why don't you take the moderate opinion of the Sephardic rabbis that Mechalel Shabbos in today's world is not excluded and you can give him aliyah to the Torah, etc. I don't know what moderate rabbi they're talking about. The major Sephardic rabbis in the world, with no exception, all of them hold the same. Rav Ovadia Yosef Zatzal, he said, cannot give aliyah to Chalal Shabbat. Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul, chief Sephardi rabbi, big mekubal, said he, and many other ones. So this is the idea here. Sometimes the person grew up in Siberia. He has no idea what Judaism is. He's not a criminal. This is the way his life was. He grew up like a goy. What does he know? He didn't have school, nobody told him, there was no rabbi over there. One day they brought him to the United States. He's 30, 40, 50 years old. Today he's discovering what Judaism is about. For the first time in his life. Of course someone like that is not a criminal. There's no question about it. It's called anus. Anus, Rahmana Patre. Anus means he was forced. But this is not 99% of the public. 5% maybe in the world from the secular people. 5%, maximum 5%. That they have no idea whatsoever that Shabbat is a holiday. Never heard of it. They never heard of religion. They don't know what it is. They were not even circumcised. No Brit Milah. Grew up completely. Their parents put Christmas tree in the house. They went to church, to a Christian school. They have no idea what Judaism is about. Okay, someone like that, Hashem understands where it comes from. But what Bukharian person can come and say, I'm in this status? Almost everyone. Maximum, his grandfather was a rabbi or a tzaddik in Bukhara. In Uzbekistan, in all these places. Yes, maybe the ones that came from Moscow, they're a little bit far away from the Torah more than others. But most of them, if it's not his father, it's his grandfather was a very, very religious person. So what are they gonna say? The Persian can come and say they never heard of Shabbat? Who can come and say? The Syrians can come and say they never heard of Shabbat? Most of the Sephardi Jews in the world, maximum one or two generations, that's it. Most, not all, yes, there's some Iraqis that five, six generations, their parents are not religious, yes. Or some Greeks, or others, yes. But in general, almost everyone you meet, well, his grandfather in Syria was Shomer Shabbat. His grandfather in Iran was Shomer Shabbat. His grandfather in Bukhara, Shomer Shabbat. His grandfather in Iraq, Shomer Shabbat. Almost everyone like this. The Yemenites, never in a history there was one secular Yemenite, ever. Until now in Yemen. Not one Chalel Shabbat in the history of Yemen, until today. Not one ever, 2,500 years. Why? They didn't have modern lifestyle. Internet, television, smartphones. That's destroying us. This electronic and this modern invention who keeps coming every day to the world, if you don't realize it by now, are destroying us. If you don't believe me, you can compare by the goyim, forget Jews. Take a regular American goy and take an Amish goy from Pennsylvania. They live 5 miles away. Take a typical American from high school, drugs, alcohol, already one or two abortions from his girlfriends, tattoos all over, crazy music, crazy lifestyle, no discipline, no getting up in the morning, no, nothing. Nothing in his life. Look at the way his life is. All day, like an addict. All day. And take this Amish guy. Both of them go in. We're not talking about religion here. Amish guy that grew up in a primitive lifestyle. An American guy who grew up with all these toys. Try to compare between them, you see the difference. By Jews, it's even more severe. By Jews, you can see the difference right away. With Torah, without Torah. This is what's going on today. Sometimes you send your kids to the best yeshivot. You pay a lot of money, but then you give them access to the filthy world. No filter, no restrictions. What do you think they do behind your back? Can't even imagine what's going on in their phones. If the parents would only have permission 1 hour to see the history of what their children have in their phones, the text messages, the movies that they watch, the things that they have on over there, they will pull their hair off, one by one, from pain. Then they wonder, why my son doesn't like to learn Gemara? Rabbi, I don't know what happened to this kid. Until 14, he was the best in his class. Now he doesn't want to learn. What can I do? We already moved him 3 different yeshivot. Of course, all days in the drugs, not necessarily drugs. The phone is a drug. What do you think the phone is? One person wrote to me now from Israel, he made Aliyah. He said to me, I'm keeping this, I'm keeping that, and I'm almost keeping Shabbat. Almost. What does it mean, almost keeping Shabbat? I just can't leave the phone off my hand. I can't, it's an addiction. He admits, he cannot leave the phone. Other than the phone, he doesn't drive, he doesn't light fire, he doesn't do a lot of things, electric, he uses tissue in the bathroom, all the necessary things. But the phone, he can't let go. It's an addiction. It's a real addiction. Just like a person is addicted to heroin or to cocaine, there's an addiction to the... Some husbands, they come home. As soon as they get home, what do they do? What do they do? Eat quickly, take a shower, whatever, sit for 3 hours on a laptop or on the tablet. No wife, no children, no family, no nothing. His eyes like this. Yes?
How are you going to stop?
Are you going to stop? First, you have to understand one thing. The idea is, first, to get to the mind of the people, the purpose of life. First thing people have to understand, what am I doing here? Why God put me here? Why give me oxygen? Why give me life? Why I have everything that I have, why do I have it for? Am I on the right direction or not? First thing for man to do is to start connect himself to Torah learning no matter what. Cannot move 1 inch from a Torah. I have one convert that converted to Judaism and left his country and moved to Israel. I have to argue with him to take new jobs. Hashem sends him jobs from time to time, and this is how he makes his money. He doesn't want to take the jobs. He wants to only learn Torah. He said, I have enough to live. You know, I don't live anything fancy. But to pay the bills daily, I have enough. I don't want to take this job. I said, but in life, there's other things besides just paying the bills. Tomorrow, God forbid, there's an emergency. Tomorrow, you have to marry your children. Next year, it's going to be bar mitzvah. You're going to need some money. Hashem is sending you money. Take it. No, it's the Yetzer Hara. It takes me away from my Torah. Do you understand? And on the other hand, there are people. Not only that they take the job, they forgot Bechlan that the Torah exists. They keep some laws as robots. They come, they did not tefillin, talit, robots. Soon as tefillah runs, his mind is all the time in business. All days in the business, now he comes home, he's in the internet. Let's be honest, somebody like this can be called religious. What exactly makes him religious? That he keeps 2-3 laws per day, like a robot? That he come to pray? Christians also pray. Muslims also pray. Abdallah also go to the mosque 5 times a day. What makes you different than Abdallah? Let's think. Okay, maybe you don't join ISIS and don't go and chop people's head. That's a good start. It's a good start. But other than that, Abdallah pray, you pray. Abdallah don't eat pork, you don't eat pork. Right? Abdallah's wife covers her body, your wife covers her body, Baruch Hashem. What else? What's the difference between you and him? Oh, you all day in the internet and he's not. And then you look down at him and say, Baruch shelo asani goy. And Hashem says, I'm not sure which one is the goy here, you or him. Behaving wise, you're much more going than him. You are, the Greek culture is in your veins. Who are you telling stories? You understand what I'm saying here or not? The problem is that when you tell people the truth, many of them get angry. What am I getting angry of? I don't understand. Anybody tells you something that the Torah say otherwise, then you get angry. Somebody comes and says something to you that the Torah did not say, fine, I understand. Well, why you're getting angry or upset. But if someone tells you what the Torah say, if someone reads to you what the Shulchan Aruch say, why don't you put your ego down and say, you know what, you're right, I have to wake up. How many more years I'm going to burn for my life? Better you shake me up today when I'm 16, 18, 20, 25, 30, 40. Then I'll wake up when I'll be 90. It will be too late by then. When are you going to fix? You don't hear, you can hardly see. Now you can still, you're active, you can still fix. You gotta get rid of this poison. It takes away every minute of your life. It takes away your neshama. It makes such a huge obstacle between you and Hashem. I wanna see one guy that is connected all day to the internet, non-stop, all day, these news, false, all this nonsense, that can tell me that he failed one day, that is attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he saw the light of the Shekhinah one day in the last year of his life. One day that he felt tears coming out of his eyes from happiness and from spiritual devotion and attachment to the Creator of the world. I want to see. One guy is in the internet. Somebody sent me a few days ago an email. Recently, my learning are not as it used to be. It used to be full of joy, full of passion. Now, everything I learn, I forget. I cannot focus anymore. Maybe it's time for me to leave yeshiva and go to work. So I say to him, maybe what you're doing is, besides learning, you're watching all kinds of things on the internet. If they're not kosher, it's needless to say that it's destroy your connection to Hashem and to the Torah. In the same bucket, you put pure water and you put garbage at the same time, and you want the water to be clean. Pure cannot be. And even if these things that you watch on the internet are kosher, they still interfere with your connection to Hashem. Check. Take 1 month break from that. Cut it from your life and see how right away your neshama light is coming back. It kills us from inside. You want to be religious? Do it right. Everything I said so far, everything is clear. Any questions so far about what I said? Yes. That's not what I meant when I said internet. Internet, you know what I mean. Sport, news, all kinds of games. Look, you have to understand one thing. People, it's all about who you are and what level you are. Complete beginning. He doesn't know anything from his life. What's going to save him now? The lectures on the internet, of course. He goes into the Facebook, he reads articles, he reads ideas, he learns halacha here and there. He learns more about Shabbat, about the way Judaism is. Obviously, right now, that serves the purpose. But I don't think I'm talking here to a group of people who yesterday heard about Judaism for the first time.
But how does that change? That is their goal. They're looking and seeing and looking in a positive direction. Why aren't you something different?
No, I have to tell you what I mean. If there was a way to...
It's like you go on the street.
If there was a way to make sure that a person used the internet only to talk, only lectures, only articles, only learning halachot, I promise you, all rabbis in the world would scream, internet, internet, all day, all night. I promise you. Reality shows that people already get into the internet, like you say, walking on the street. When you walk in the street, three times a day you walk into the shul. 2 hours. What do you do in the other 12 hours? I don't want to tell you what's going on in the street. Same thing, internet.
Why is it automatically assumed that you're going to do for the law?
It's not assumed, it's a fact.
Don't you instill that in someone to automatically go towards that instead of allowing someone that ability to have strength and self-control in themselves as well?
If it was assumed, then you're right. But it's not assumed, it's a fact. It's a fact that it destroyed thousands of homes, and it destroyed marriages, and it destroyed the youth. People who were devoted for Torah as soon as they discovered the internet. First of all, one of the biggest mistakes parents do is give their teenagers cell phones. That's where the distractions begin. The kids, when they're 12, 13 years old, they begin. I need a phone, all my friends have a phone, I cannot text my friends. This is how it begins. And once you surrender to them and you give them the phone, you come back to me a year later and you tell me if it wasn't a mistake of your life or not. Show me one person that can come today and say, you know, only good came to me since I gave my children phones. Usually, for every 100 kids, 99 of them drop drastically. From the minute they get a phone, all the problems begin. It begins in the beginning as innocent text, laughing, jokes. Then it moves into other things. Then the romance begins. And then on Shabbat also they begin to text. From 20 years experience I'm talking to you.
But why not teach conviction and self-control?
I agree. That part I actually made a lecture to teach the children how to live in a world with these temptations. But as long as the yeshivot will not re-modify the way they teach, and they're not going to adjust to the dangers of our generation, there's no other etza, there's no other advice. You're right. We need a root canal here. We have to fix from the roots. Right now, there is no big influential rabbis in the world that are willing to take this assignment to start rewrite all the plans of the teaching of the yeshivot and how to educate children to adjust to this world that we live in. You see, we are behind 20 years behind technology. We're behind. The rabbis, they did not know that one day all of a sudden it's going to become a whole different world, that you have access to all the kufrim, all the kfirah, by push of a button. In the old days, to find a kufir, it may take you 40 years. Today, all you have to do is to put a name and everything comes in front of your eyes. By the time the yeshivot realize the danger, we are really behind. So now the question is, now what are we going to do? We're going to wait until they're going to change the plans, by then we'll be dead spiritually completely, or we're going to take actions right now to protect our children until it will happen. Believe me, if from very young age, these children will be taught how to live in a world with all this technology, and how to watch themselves, and how to protect themselves, then we will have to see if it's possible to pass this test or not. Maybe with all the education, maybe with all the training that the yeshivot will give, it still will not be possible to overcome this desire. Because sometimes you can talk to your son hundreds of times about something not to do. As soon as you finish, he goes and he does it. Not everything is about education, yeah. Since internet came to the world, and since all these Facebook pages came to the world, and since smartphone came to the world, a lot of the yeshiva kids went completely off the deck. At the same time, we use it.
But it depends on parents.
We use it. It's nothing to do with the parents. I'm talking.
It depends where you come from.
I'm talking to sons of big Rashi Shivot are completely off the derech with heroin needles in their hands because of the smartphones. One thing leads to another. The father, I'm sure that the Rosh Yeshiva knows what education to give his son. Sure.
Why the Rosh Yeshiva don't let the kids to bring the iPhones or phones to the school?
First of all, not all the time you let them. Sometimes they get it on the
most of it.
He's 70 and he goes and he buys it. It's also a problem. There's not always yet control over it.
There's a lot of control in the house.
They do the computer, they go to the
in some yeshivot, for instance, even if you have an email, you can get accepted to the yeshiva. If they know, they search, and they find your name as an email address, they throw you out of the yeshiva in the middle of the year. Yes. You know, I wanted to send my daughter emails of the CDs orders that we get, that she can help pack them. So I said, let me make you an email that I will send from my phone instead of keep writing it on a piece of paper. The order that comes, I will forward directly to your personal email. Like this, you can check and do the packages. She said to me, well, as soon as you make me an email, then it will be my last day in yeshiva. So I was naive. I didn't know that. I said, so what do you mean? She said, well, it's against the rules. You cannot have your own email. And I said, Baruch Hashem, kosher yeshiva. Yes, very good. That's the way it should be. Because even though the email may help a lot, and she's gonna get a lot of good things on the email, it's enough she gets one or bad or two bad things on the email and your life is over. What are you gonna do if they send to your daughter these porn dirty things to her email that they send to thousands of people every day? What are you gonna do? If a 12 or 14 years old girl will open it and she'll see these things and from that moment on, it will mess up her head, it will mess up her everything in life. Or your son, that his mind is in a Gemara, and he got these things, and kids are curious. One thing leads to another, you don't know what it's gonna lead them to. How many kids with one bad picture destroy their life? One bad picture, and destroy their life. Destroy their life, yes? Yes, so I said, for the secular people that are anyway in the internet, you might as well take advantage that they are there to bring them to become religious. But for people that are growing up religious, why to put them into that dirty area? Why? They don't need it, they can be religious without it. You don't need to be mekarev kids from religious families by giving them internet. There is plenty of yeshivot that can be mekarev them and teach them Torah. If a kid grows in a religious home, he needs internet to become religious? Oy vey, if that's the case. The internet can be good to make non-religious people religious, yes. Because there's no other way to get to them. How are you going to get to them? They're not coming to shul. They're not sending their kids to yeshivot. So you have to go into their territory and save them over there. But if your kids are in a kosher territory, you want to put them in a dirty territory and save them from there? Where is your logic? You understand? Any more questions so far?
How we can stop?
Wait, wait a minute. 1 second. You're right. There's a lot of dirty things in the world. It doesn't mean we have to surrender to it. Let me ask you a question. Why don't you take your kids to the gay parade to march with the gays and see it's a part of the world? Half of the world became like that. Oh, why are you going like this? You have to be honest. You want them to see the dirt and handle it? Let them see all the dirt. Yes, let me hear you.
Why take them outside? All you have to do is look.
You're right. Some neighborhoods, it's a piguach nefesh to let your kids go outside. You're right. Let me ask you a question. If you lived in Harlem, would you let your kids walk in the street outside, 6, 7, 8 in the evening?
Yes.
Yes? You're a very brave father.
You teach them how to protect themselves, how to heal themselves, based on their environment.
Kids that walk at 8, 9 o'clock in Harlem, they can protect themselves as much as they want until one monster will hit them.
Harlem today is not what it was.
I don't know. Harlem of 20 years ago. Yes, I don't know what it is today. You're right. You got the idea, right? Any more here? You wanted to ask me questions? You just left.
Medication for printers.
Control, not to give them in first place. Let me ask you a question. A father that gave his son drugs by mistake, and he's in it. Now, because he already gave it to him, he should surrender to it, or he should do everything he can to take it out of him? You have to fight and correct the mistakes you made. You don't understand what I'm saying here. I'm telling you right now, giving them access to the free. Do you know what? You have to understand one thing. The internet has no limitation. There's no limitation. Every innocent word that they put in Google can already bring horrible pictures out there. It's not that they have a filter, that the goyim have discipline, that they care about their own children. Technically, in a normal world, the United States government should have made rules that certain pictures cannot be put online, and if you put them, you're subject to 20 years in prison. Why? Because the ones who make the laws also have children. And if they were a little bit clever, they would think about the future of their children. But we live in a zoo. These people don't care what the children see, and they don't care how they turn. They only wake up when they need rehab. But we live in the same world. We have to protect our children. Just because the lawmakers are idiots, it doesn't mean that we have to be like them. We have to try to save our children from what they don't care to save their own children from. That's it. Yes. Password is only good when you're not home, that they cannot touch the computer when you're not home. But let's say when you're home and they ask you, mommy, open me the computer, so you put your password. What are you gonna do? You're gonna sit there 3 hours and see everything he does on the screen? Look, we have to understand one thing. You wanna be religious? Religion has many enemies. I'll tell you a list of the enemies that religion has. When you're religious and you want to raise your children religious, first enemy is the school. If you put them in the wrong school, that becomes a major threat to their religion. Okay. Second enemies are relatives. Your brothers, your sisters, your parents, people that are anti-religion. They're not happy that their daughter and her husband became religious. So in their mind, they have to save the children from the religion. They don't want the children to be like their daughter. They want the children to be like them. So here you go. Your parents and your siblings become the enemy of the religion. Right? I give you another example. The neighborhood where you choose to live. In the neighborhood, there can be many enemies of their religion. It's enough that your daughter see how all the other girls in the building dress. That's a very big threat to their religion. Because people are influenced by what they see. A person is a product of his environment. There's nothing he can do about it. The environment influences the people. As I gave an example of the Irish people, or I'm giving you an example of ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods in Jerusalem, over there you see how the people dress very modest. But in modern neighborhoods, already you see a huge drop in the modesty. Why? It's enough, 2 or 3 girls are not modest. Everyone follows them with the help of the Satan. What other dangers? Electronic, internet, telephones, text. This is all enemies of the religion. Don't think I don't want to be primitive. I want to be advanced. I don't want to be less than my sister and my brother that they are not religious. I don't want my kids to be left back with their education. Don't think like that. That's not the right way to think. You have to think in this world what's important. First, to save the soul. Then comes the body and the convenience and the pleasure and the money and the house and the career and all this nonsense. This does not go with you to life of eternity. That's why you should not sacrifice eternity for temporary nonsense. This is what you have to get to your head. We have to make sacrifices to protect our spirituality. If we surrender to the world in the United States or in Israel or in Europe, if we surrender to it, that will be our end. We're not gonna have the eternity and the spirituality that Hashem is expecting us to have. Now, when Hashem put us in this world, well, he didn't know there would be internet. He knew. He didn't know there would be so many obstacles and temptations. He knew. He knew there's gonna be internet. He knew it's gonna be Facebook. He knew how people would walk naked on the street. He knew there's gonna be so many people with chutzpah, with disrespect. He knew all that. He knew, and he puts us in such a dirty world. And here, right here in Brooklyn, in Manhattan, in no matter where you are, in Tel Aviv, over here is expecting you to be tzaddik no less than David HaMelech. There's no discount. If the generation, if the Torah say, well, you have a discount if you live in an area that the people are not so righteous, it'll be a different story. But where does it say in the Torah? Did you ever see in the Torah that it say, well, if you live in Monsi, I expect you not to text on Shabbat. But if you live in Brooklyn, I allow you to text on Shabbat. There's no such thing, ma. Well, Shabbat is the same Shabbat, whether you're in Siberia, whether you're in Monsi, whether you're in Mea Shearim, or in Manhattan. Same Shabbat. What people from Manhattan can come and say, no, over here it's a zoo. Look what's going on here. You don't really expect us to keep Shabbat 100% like the law, like the Shulchan Aruch. Where does it say such thing? Where? So, if it's hard for you to be religious in Manhattan, move out of there. If you see that you're not strong enough, you have to move out of there. Yeah, you don't believe me. There is one person very famous from the community here in Queens. He told me that he's going to get a new job now. He's starting to work in real estate in Manhattan. I said to him, I don't understand. You want to sell your soul in order for you to make more money? Do you know what it means to walk in Manhattan, to walk in the street, to meet all these people that have no respect for Hashem, for religion, nothing? How long do you think you're going to be able to stay in the same level that you reach? Isn't it a shame that in a few weeks you're going to lose everything? So he went anyway, but after 1 week he quit. He said to me, you have no idea how right you were. 1 week in real estate in Manhattan, almost all my religion that I built for so many years, with so much sweat and effort, went down the tube. Impossible, man. I'm telling you myself, I've been now, I travel, I go to places. I sometimes come to places, I say to myself, if I live here, 1 month I go to zero in this place. 1 month I live around all these fakers and all these hypocrites and all these people who have no religion, no emunah, no faith. It's all about show off. How long will I survive there? That's why Abraham Avinu is so great. Why Abraham is so great? Ma, is there the only Baal Tshuva in history? Oh, Hashem, there are many other Baal Tshuva. There's also many other righteous people. But why did the Torah describe Abraham in such a great way? Because he lived in a world full of losers, full of wicked people, full of idol worshippers, full of people who worship all kinds of idols. And he never moved from the truth. No matter what people say, no matter what they... Abraham never moved from the truth. That's why Abraham who say, I love Abraham, not only because I know he keeps all my laws, but he will teach his children to continue in the right way. You understand? We think, well, today there's harder tests than before. It's true. Abraham didn't have to deal with his children what dirty things they would see. Why? All women were mothers. The words were clean. There was no internet. There was no horrible things like today. Fine. But on the other hand, you're forgetting that to keep the law 3,000 years ago was a lot harder than today. Today it's very easy to keep Shabbat. The house is warm, you don't have to bring trees, light fire, warm if you're gonna freeze for the rest of Shabbat. Today I have toilet paper, tissue, you pay dollar, everything is cut, nice and neat for you. Shower timers, it lights everything on and off. The food is hot, warm, like five-star restaurants. Beautiful mattresses, great feeling in Shabbat, beautiful comfortable chairs. Huh? Guests coming from far away with the car, there's rooms, they sleep over, beautiful, ma. Technology, same technology that is destroying us, on the other hand, makes our life a lot easier. You have to take the good and get rid of the bad. That's the whole point here. So, no matter how you look at that, yes, there's harder tests, but at the same time, life is a lot easier. I want to see you Friday night, 2 a.m., after good meal of mashpulot, and you know, seven different flows in the Bukharian meal. Baruch Hashem, your stomach is about to explode from all the good food, and now you need a bathroom. 1,000 years ago, no electric, no bathroom,
outside,
no toilet paper, outside, in Uzbekistan or in Bukhara, in a mountain with snow up to here, right? Now you have to go look for a place, 2 a.m. in the darkness, in the snow, to do your bathroom, and there's no tissue. No light, 2 a.m., 20 below zero, on the ice. I want, and the wind in your face. I promise you nobody will eat Friday night. But God forbid they don't eat the bathroom later on. Maybe that's why people were so skinny back then. What's the point of eating, Rabbi? I'm paying big time for it. I ended up freezing my feet. Not to talk about the snakes, and about the bears, and about the fox. All kinds of other guests out there. You understand? People complain, $200,000 bathroom, seven like this in their home. This one from Italy, this one from Japan, this one from Africa. Imported marble. They complain. You want to see the bathroom in the Israeli army when I joined the army?
Mechanical, everything is clean.
If you go into the bathroom in the Israeli army 25 to 30 years ago and you come out alive, it's already a miracle. Yes, there's no more flushing. No, it's a hole in the ground. And from the day they started the Israeli army, there is a treasure down there. Accumulation of thousands of soldiers and flies, those green, horrible ones. And you make it. Imagine if your Shabbat looked like that. So what are you complaining about?
We need medication for
you. Did we hear about it?
We got nervous.
You got the point? It's much, much easier to live today. Just watch your eyes from all this electronic device, that's all. And that, don't make that mistake with the children. You have to be very careful. You know, I want to tell you one thing. Even if they play kosher games, that's you buy them a device, and they only play. Nothing bad can come out of it. They don't watch dirty things. But it already attracts their mind away from the Gemara. They're not interested to learn anymore. Because he sits in the class and all day thinking, when is going to be four? That I can already go to these Pac-Man games. That's what's on his mind. He can't focus. Because the Yetzer Hara, what do you think? Is a little kid? It's a genius. What the Satan is a genius. He used these devices to destroy the neshamot of the children. Do you understand what it is or not? Any more questions before we finish? Yes. Yes. Ah, no questions. No? Everything is clear?
Very clear.
Very clear.
Need medication.
I just want to finish with one thing. I'm going to read to you the word. quotes of the Rambam. The words of the Rambam, word by word, agglomerated in Hebrew and then translated to English. This is what the Rambam writes. In case you don't know who the Rambam is, it's the biggest posek halakha in Judaism in the last 1,000 years. More than 90% of the Shulchan Aruch is based on the rulings of the Rambam. They say, from Moshe to Moshe, lo kam ke Moshe. From Moshe Rabbeinu all the way to Rambam, there was no other Moshe. Moshe to Moshe. That's how great he is. And the Rambam writes, I'll read to you word by word what the Rambam writes. Ve'lo emtza etza lelamed emet sheuchach, ela al yedei שיתאים למעולה אחד ולא יתאים לעשרת אלפים שחלים. Translation, I cannot find any other advice to teach the truth that was proven to only one superb person that will not be suitable to tens of thousands of fools. I rather, listen, הריני מעדיף לאומרו בשביל האחד ולא אחוש לגינוי ההמון המרובים. I rather say the truth for the one individual that will get improved by it, even though 10,000 will go further away from their foolishness. I still say the truth for the one, and I can care less about the 10,000 fools. This is the words of the Rambam. In case you don't understand, this is the answer to all these people who say, when you say the truth, some people run away. Let them run away, it's not our problem. We have to say the truth of Hashem. You want it, you're welcome. You don't want it, goodbye. Nobody has to bow down to you and kiss your feet to agree to keep the laws of God. It's a privilege. You're not doing us a favor. We used to live in a lie, we used to live in a darkness. One day we found the truth, we try, we struggle. We try to live according to the truth. You want to join the truth, you're welcome. It's not painful, it's not costful. It's free. All you have to do is join the wagon. You don't want, it's your problem, not ours. So the Rambam says, I'm going to put all my efforts to save the one, the superb one, from the confusion that is in, until I save him from his situation and bring him to success. לפי שאנחנו מעדיפים שימשך אחרינו בעל שכל בידיעת האמת ואפילו אחד, because we prefer that one intelligent person will follow us in the truth, although 10,000 fools will run away. We are not worried about them. We worry only about the one. This is the answer to all these people at Mekarvim that in this generation are doing the opposite. What do they say? Let's not show all the truth. Only what people like to hear. There's no permission for that. You have to show the truth of the Torah. This is the truth. This is what Hashem said. You show the beauty of the Torah, but at the same time, you make people understand. You continue to live the way you are, you're going to pay a massive price in the end. There's no discount. Nobody would say, I didn't know. Here you are. You come, we'll teach you. You don't want to learn, it's your problem. You cannot come and say, I didn't know. What do you mean you didn't know? Why you did not come to learn? It's everywhere, it's free. Every shul you walk in, there's plenty of books. Nobody charges you to read. You come, you learn. You have internet, you don't come, you don't have shul in your area. Everything you want today you have in the internet. What Judaism think about afterlife? Boom, right away lectures comes out. What Shabbat? Boom, hundreds of different speakers about Shabbat. What's about the free choice? If God knows the future, how do we choose? You put it in, right away lecture comes out. Not one excuse yet. When it comes to business, people know how to do research beautifully. Everything they search, car, they want to buy a car, they search model, comments, these defects, recalls, everything. But when it comes to the most important thing, they don't know anything. They prefer not to know. It's good to be ignorant. Why? Nobody can claim anything against me. The answer is wrong. The truth will never change. The truth applies to you and to her and to everybody on earth. No one can come and say I'm a fool. That's why Hashem will understand me, because you're not a fool. When it comes to business, you're very clever. When it comes to sport, you know all the names. Every player who ever kicked the ball, you know the size of his underwear. Everything you know. But when it comes to Torah, excuse me, I cannot remember the name of Rabbi Akiva, I'm sorry. Of course you're not going to remember. You have so much garbage in your head, you want to remember the holy rabbis, the holiest who lived here? You have to choose a side. You can't be one leg in Sodom, one leg in Yerushalayim. You have to choose. Where do you want to be? You want to dress like in Yerushalayim, or you want to dress like Sodom v'Amorah? You want to live like in San Francisco, or you want to live like in Monsi? You have to choose. You cannot be one leg here and one leg there for 40 years. Where are you? Are you religious? Or you're not? You have to make up your mind. What is this? 50% religious, 50% a goy? 2 hours religious, an hour later a goy? 2 hours is in a shul, talit, filin, like this, an hour later a dirty movie on a computer. What's going on here? But 4 or 5 days she dressed like a Rebbetzin, but tomorrow there's a wedding. All of a sudden, tight mini skirt above the knees, open, these tons of makeup, $5,000 a week comes out of the closet. What? Okay, over here I could be religious, but now all my friends, but they're gonna see me like this, madness, it's not good. One day she's a Rebbetzin, the next day Hashem Yirachem, she's a mother. Rabbits and money. Rabbi O.J. Simpson. You know what the problem is? You talk and you talk and you talk. Like the Rambam saying, the one that would get the points, what? 10,000 would run away, would make excuses, would bark, would complain. That's not my problem. In this world, we don't have an obligation to succeed. We have an obligation to do everything correctly, to the maximum efforts that we can. That's it. The rest is not in my hand. I put all my efforts. If I succeed, fine. I don't succeed, I shall lose. What he does? No, we don't know what. Person raise a kid. He puts his life into him. God forbid, an accident will die. It's in his hand. Can he prevent it? It's not life and death, it's not in our hands. Sometimes a person did all the mistake he could with a kid, all of a sudden this kid became tzaddik. And the father walks in the neighborhood, thanks to me, look what a tzaddik chacham my son is. Well, thanks to you. Thanks, if it was up to you, he would be already in ISIS. It was up to you. You're lucky that something, a miracle happened, that this boy opened up his eyes. Maybe he met the right person, maybe he listened to the right speaker, he became religious. He became religious although you his father, not thanks to you. Sometimes you deserve the credit. You give them the right education, you pray for him, you beg him, you talk to him hundreds of times. Eventually, you went into his mind, eventually. Sometimes it's thanks to your to the wife. Sometimes it's thanks to you. Sometimes it's thanks to none of you. Bottom line, not everything we understand. We don't know. It's Chaged Esav. What? It's his fault? Of course, Abraham and Ishmael. It's his fault. He didn't give the right education to believe in one God and to be tzaddik and to be kind and all that. Of course he did. Ishmael didn't see what kind of special father he has. Many of the kids here in the community, they see they have wonderful parents. They see how they get up early in the morning and they pray and they run to shul, snow, no snow, or how they give up all kinds of business opportunity for the truth. They see it. And what do? They go to the other direction. What can you do? Besides crying to Hashem and do your best, not everything is possible. What can you do? You cry, you beg, you talk to them. The rest is not in your hand. That's why I tell people something. Why do you kill yourself over it? Is it your fault? Did you teach him to be mechalel Shabbat? No, you keep Shabbat, right? Yeah. Did you teach him to go and to be a thief? No, you're not a thief, right? No. So why do you kill yourself? Cry to Hashem, beg Hashem. Hopefully Hashem will have mercy. I'm telling you, I don't remember that the amount of tragedies were high like now. Worse now it's ever been. I mean, I've been saying it for years. When I said it a year ago, I didn't believe it can get worse. But it did get worse. The amount of tragedies and emails that I get per day to pray for him and for him and for that, and people are desperate. And people's life in a minute, an hour ago they were choking and happy, and all of a sudden 2 hours later you get an email from, what happened in 2 hours? The life is over. They just discovered something, whatever. The question is, we don't know what's going to be with us. But one thing we do want, whatever happened with us, no matter how long we're going to be here or won't be here, and we have to leave the world, and we can stay in the world, or God forbid we have suffering, we don't know. Well, one thing, it's in our hand. When we leave this world, we're going to leave it righteous and clean, and Hashem will be proud of us, or God forbid, we will be total fakers. That's 100% in our hands. To suffer or not, it's not up to me. It's up to Hashem if he wants, he sends the suffering. To be healthy or not, not up to me. To be rich or poor, to become a homeless, not in my hands. If my brain will function in the next hour, not in my hand. If I can breathe another minute, not in my hand. If my kids will be righteous or wicked, not everything is in my hand. Some is in my hand, the rest is in many, many different factors. If I leave the world righteous or wicked, 100% in my hand. If I leave the world righteous or wicked, 100% in my hand. This is the message. The rest is not in my hand. I want to thank you very much for coming. We'll see you hopefully again. Please take 3 CDs right there. Thank you very much. We'll see you again.